Oyez, oyez, oyez. All persons having business before the Honorable, the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit, are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and this Honorable Court. Be seated, please. Case number 10-5248. Thomas E. Moore, III, Appellant versus Central Intelligence Agency. Mr. Sobel for Appellant, Ms. Lyons for Appellant.
Good morning, Your Honors. This case is unusual but straightforward. This court has long held that under appropriate circumstances, an agency may refuse to confirm or deny whether it possesses records responsive to a Freedom of Information request. It is also recognized that in certain cases, the agency can be deemed to have waived its ability to do so. Such a waiver occurs when the fact that responsive records exist has already been acknowledged by the agency. In this case, such a waiver occurred when the CIA filed a declaration in the district court in which it acknowledged that an FBI document that was released in part to the plaintiff contained what was characterized as CIA-originated information.
Right, but it didn't acknowledge that it contained information about Valfill.
Well, Your Honor, I think you need to look at the scope of the request. The request was for information relating to Valfells.
And the CIA only said it had CIA-originated information. It didn't say anything about Valfell. And isn't that the difference between this case and Wolf?
I don't think so, Your Honor. I think you need to look at the
circumstance. Wolf requires a match.
Excuse me?
I said Wolf requires a match.
A precise match.
Precise match, and you don't have that here.
Well, I believe if you look at the processing protocols that an agency uses in processing, as we've pointed out, an agency has the ability to designate information as non-responsive.
Well, we don't know. But it doesn't have to do that, and there's no evidence in the record about the FBI and whether it has that whether it does that. You cite the NSA, but not the FBI.
That's correct, Your Honor, and I believe that there have been other cases cited in which other agencies have availed themselves of the non-responsive.
Right, but there's no obligation on the agency's part to do it, even if it did do it, even if other agencies do follow that procedure. There's no. Is there any requirement that it do that?
There's no requirement, Your Honor, but I believe that you need to approach this with a common sense outlook
approach it. Based on our precedent. I'm not suggesting our precedent's not based on common sense, but we have a very clear binding precedent here, Wolf. And Wolf says there has to be a match, and in Wolf there was a match because the CIA director had testified as to the precise name of the foreign national the plaintiffs were seeking in that case. And here, all the CIA did is say this CIA originated information. So well, there's no match. There's no agency revealing of the information that you're looking for.
But Your Honor, I believe that formulation puts too tight a definition on what a match in this case would constitute.
That's Wolf.
Well, I think we need to look at the question of a match. And in this case, the request was for information relating to Valfells. Now, the agency in its brief...
How do we know from what was redacted that it had anything to do with Valfells? It could have been any number of things. We just don't know that.
Well, Your Honor, I believe even what the agency has postulated in its brief, the alternative types of information that it might involve, other individuals in Iceland, country conditions, I think all of that, to the extent that the FBI report, which is clearly about Valfells, incorporated that material, indicates that it relates to Valfells. I think you need to look at the scope of the request.
That's a surmise that you take, right, based on the context, and as you're saying, perhaps based on common sense. I don't know that it requires that, but it's a step that Wolf does not allow us to take. Wolf doesn't allow us to draw inferences. Wolf tells us that there has to be a match, and the government here has nowhere conceded that the redacted information is about Volfels and maybe about any number of things.
But again, when you say any number of things, it needs to be looked at in the context of this request. It needs to be looked at in the context of the subject matter of the FBI report, which is solely about Volfels.
Does Wolf say, look at the context?
Well, Your Honor, obviously Wolf arose in a somewhat different circumstance. I think we need to take Wolf and apply the principle there of a waiver and a disclosure of information and look at it in the totality of the circumstance is present here. Now, this would be a different case.
Before you go on to the totality, let's look at Wolf. Wolf says, it says to be officially acknowledged, it must meet three conditions. And the first two are, it must be specific as the information released, and matches the information previously released. So I understand your point about looking at the broader context, but I'm just not sure. How do you think we can do that given the very specific language of Wolf? That's the point. Wolf is very precise here.
Your Honor, I would argue that the match here is specific. Again, I don't think you can divorce the analysis from the context. This would be a very different case if the FBI had withheld in its entirety the 1956 report and we didn't know what the context of that material was. And then the CIA came in and said, well, part of what was withheld in full by the FBI was CIA-originated information that was withheld at our request. Then it would be supposition in terms of what this CIA-originated information might be. But here we have a multi-page report which is very clear in its scope. It deals solely with Mr. Volfels. So to suggest that CIA-originated information could relate to something completely outside of the scope of that report, have something to do with something entirely divorced from Mr. Volfels, simply isn't reasonable. So I think you have to look at the context, because as I say, if the document had been withheld in its entirety or was redacted to the point where you couldn't make sense of the scope of the 1956 report, then I think we would be in the situation that Your Honor suggests, where it would be a matter of speculation as to what the CIA information pertained to. But here I think it's clear and we don't have that problem.
I want to ask you and go back to what the statute requires and what the request, the legitimate part of it, asked for. FOIA, as you know, relates only to records. And Mr. Moore asked for information and records. Both of these pages from the FBI report, the one on page 85, which is titled Administrative Data, talks about information from the CIA, nothing about a record from the CIA, information. The other one with the allusion to TI, or to T1, which may be the CIA, talks again about information. I have a problem fitting this under a FOIA request for records, because it's quite possible that the information was not a record. In other words, Joe Jones sitting on the Iceland desk at CIA in the 50s told the FBI agent that he was working with, well, I got a report that this man went into the Soviet embassy. No record at all from the CIA, but there's a FBI report, and the FBI says to the CIA, this originated with you. No, still no record. So how do you get to the record from the use of the word information?
Your Honor, I'd say two things about that, and I'll try to be quick because I'd like to preserve a little time for rebuttal. First of all, the FBI report was produced in 1946, long before there was the concept of record as we know of it in FOIA. So I don't think you can put too much stock in the use of that particular terminology 1956, again, long before FOIA was enacted. So I wouldn't read too much into the use of the term information as opposed to record. But ultimately, I think the answer the court raises cannot be answered until the agency conducts a search, which is really the only relief that we're asking for here, that that search be conducted and we know whether there are, in fact, records within the meaning of FOIA.
So you don't give any particular meaning to their careful use of the word information as opposed to records?
Well, again, Your Honor, I'm not sure that we can characterize the use of the word information in 1956 as careful in terms of a FOIA analysis. That was a concept that was simply not a distinction that was simply not made at that time. But again, if a search is conducted, we would finally have the answer to that question.
Other information it got, and its own report. All right.
I simply can't answer that on this record, Your Honor. Thank you.
Ms. Lyons?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. The heart of this case is whether the CIA's acknowledgement that unspecified information that originated with the CIA and found its way into the FBI's 1956 report impacts the CIA's previous Glomar response for information about a specific foreign national. The disclosure of the existence, but not the contents of this case, the evidence of which is at JA 111 in paragraph 11, that's the CIA's declaration, because nothing in the record makes the necessary link to Mr. Volfeld's any place, the CIA's Glomar response continues to be valid. Here, appellant has argued that the match is close enough, and as the court has been discussing under Wolf, there is no fact in the record that he can point to that shows an acknowledgement by the CIA. We have to be careful about whose information it is and who's doing the acknowledging. And I'd also like to make the point that the scope of the FOIA request, neither the scope of the FOIA request nor the scope of the FBI's disclosure can dictate what the CIA acknowledges, because this court's precedents have clearly held that an acknowledgement can only be deemed official and held against an agency when it's made by that agency. And that's Fregone versus CIA.
I'm looking at the report, and I'm looking at the, you know, the redactions, and I'm looking at the first redactions on JA 164. It says, in line with the report that Volfels has assisted the CPI, the source stated that Volfels has contributed to the CPI's daily newspaper and that he once gave a mansion to blank, a prominent Icelandic communist. Now, that's
yes,
information
sir.
About Volfels, right? I mean, that's acknowledging that there's information about Volfels. What's being redacted is a dealing he had with some other individual that name is taken out. How is that not an acknowledgement that there is, that the CIA has information about Volfeld?
If I could direct Your Honor to the margin where the redactions are actually noted, they're B6 and B7C.
Right.
So that is not something that the CIA asked to be redacted under exemptions 1 and 3. So that redaction right there that you're pointing to is by the FBI for personal privacy reasons and not because of the CIA.
Well, the plaintiff says, "Look, we were looking for information they were looking for information related to Volfels, and this report clearly relates to Volfels."
But this is an FBI report, so what this reflects is one FBI author's inclusion of some information that originated from the CIA. Mm-hmm. It takes too much of a logical leap or inference and not the exact match of an official acknowledgement by the CIA to satisfy the standard in Wolf.
Yeah.
And that's why this case is different.
I'm sorry, I meant relevant to Wolf. That was their request, right? Not related to, relevant.
Yes, relevant.
Right.
Okay.
What's your position about information versus record?
I think that's a very interesting distinction that you've drawn this morning, Your Honor. I regret not having thought of it and put it in my brief. I agree with Mr. Sobel that there is a historical gap since the FOIA wasn't passed until the 1970s. On the other hand, On this record in this case, there's absolutely no way to discern the difference between information that existed in any form other than a record, but you're entirely correct. Your hypothesis is completely valid.
It seems to me when you read from page 84, the T1 report, quote unquote, it sounds like hearsay. You know, somebody said, well, he also contributed to the Conservative Party, and he once gave a mansion to somebody.
Right. I don't disagree that it sounds like things people are talking about rather than information that's necessarily being read and then transposed or recorded. I would also point out to the court, for example, that on page JA99, there's also another reference to T2. There isn't just one undisclosed source of information in this report. There's references to T2 on JA99 and again on JA102. So once again, we're even further removed from being able to make any kind of evidentiary connection between information about Volfels and the CIA. There is simply no acknowledgement here by the CIA of any information about Volfels. With regard to Mr. Sobel's argument about the ability to do different things, for example, if the information does not relate to Mr. Volfels, then the information could have simply been withheld by the FBI as non-responsive. But the fact that things could have been done differently doesn't alter where we are today. Without an official acknowledgement by the CIA, the ruling Wolf and the court's previous precedents recognizing the importance of the potential harm to national security in this area all dictate that this decision should be affirmed. If there are no further questions, I'd request that the judgment be affirmed.
Can you just briefly address the DiMaio Declaration as a acknowledgement or not?
Of course, Your Honor. I mean, the DiMaio Declaration, which appears at JA 107, explains for purposes of litigation what happened in this case. And it nowhere confirms or denies that the information that originated with the CIA and found its way into the report is about Mr. Volfels. It goes to great lengths to explain the impact of on potential intelligent interests and human intelligent interests and foreign relations, and all that information is squarely in line with this court's precedents in Wolf and other cases about the harm. Ultimately, it says, I'm sure it's frustrating to Mr. Moore, it says very little about what the information in the report was, but that's the point.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Sobel, why don't you take 2 minutes?
Thank you, Your Honors. Just getting back to this question of what the T1 information appears to be and the characterization, you know, that it looks like it might be hearsay, I don't think any of us can answer that question. And, you know, I think it clearly is relating to Volfels, and I think it underscores the point I made earlier that when you look at the totality of this report, it's clear that everything in that report, because frankly, very little is redacted. So you can really read this report and have an understanding of the scope of it and the kinds of information that the FBI saw fit to include. So I think there's no question that the information that originated with the CIA relates to Volfels if it was deemed appropriate for inclusion in the report. I would just like to turn briefly to the question of mootness that the district court found, which was to say that even if there had been a waiver in this case and that the Glomar response was not appropriate, the district court held that the need for any relief would be a moot point in any event because we've received the FBI report and it contains whatever information is disclosable, presumably including any information obtained from the CIA, and that the plaintiff did not challenge the redactions made by the CIA. But there's no reason to believe that the 1956 FBI report reflects the totality of the information that was provided by the CIA. So I think it's an error for the district court to have concluded with no basis in the record that the request for relief would be moot because plaintiff already had received everything to which he would be entitled if, as we believe there was a waiver. So I think the only way that question could be answered is if, as we've requested, the CIA conducts a comprehensive search, and if the results of that request result in a showing that, in fact, the totality of the CIA information is reflected in the 1956 report, then the mootness point would be appropriate. But short of that request and short of that information being in the record, I don't think there's any way that this court could come to that conclusion.
Wolf, on remand, will you refresh my recollection? A search was conducted?
A search was conducted, Your Honor, and as the reporting of the proceedings in the district court reflect, a substantial amount of information was located, and it was not restricted to the material that Director Hillenkoetter specifically read from in his congressional testimony. The CIA produced material that, as the agency characterized it, appeared to be the source of material that Director Hillenkoetter reference. So the door was opened far wider in the Wolf case than the agency suggests would be appropriate here.
Thank you.
Thank you for your attention, Your Honors.